This is Karen Lyle with a Treasure Island Museum Spotlight, brought to you in partnership with the Academy of Art University, School of Multimedia Communications. Today's interview is with Thomas Kewen, who was a flight engineer on the Pan Am Clipper flying boats that took off from Treasure Island on their way to the Far East.
A seaplane named China Clipper made the first trip. The publicity for that flight caused all flying boats on that air route to become known popularly as China Clippers.
When a giant four-motor, 26-ton flying boat takes off...
Well, I was a flight engineer for Pan American. Basically, as an aeronautical engineer, and a licensed aircraft mechanic. And on the airplane, the pilots held the wheel and steered the airplanes, and the engineer operated the engines and the air conditioning systems, the electric systems. Sort of like the engineer on an ocean liner, same idea. But with a big four-engine airplane, there were so many complicated systems that the pilots didn't have time to fool with that. They just flew the airplane. And the engineer took care of the chores.
This China Clipper was the first of three Martin M130 four-engine flying boats built for Pan American Airways. It was used to inaugurate the first commercial trans-Pacific air service from San Francisco to Manila in November 1935.
My first trip to Hawaii was in August of 1943 on the China Clipper. It took 22 and a half hours to get from San Francisco to Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. 22 and a half hours. But we had a double crew, and we had some bunks where we could take a nap. But it was still a long, long ride.
The initial flight carried only airmail. Passenger service began in October 1936 with three Clippers. They flew from San Francisco Bay to Pearl Harbor, Midway Atoll, Wake Island, to Guam, and to Manila Bay. That took 6 days of approximately 60 hours of flying time at a cruising speed of 130 miles per hour.
For more information on the free lectures on Treasure Island, visit www.treasureislandmuseum.org. This is Karen Lyle with the Treasure Island Museum Spotlight.
All right, it is Tuesday at 9:40 a.m. out here in San Francisco, and this is when we check in with our friend Karen Lyle, co-hosting the segment with me from SailSportsTalk.com, as we get on the seven seas. Karen, how you doing?
I'm doing just fantastic, and we are co-hosting SailSport Talk show together for 182 shows now.
182 shows. Well, let's bring in our guest. It's David Perry, a great name for someone who is a mariner. He is the maritime historian and has been on our guest, be sure, before. He has recently wrote a fiction murder mystery that has been getting very good reviews as well. And let's, David, first of all, welcome back to the show. What is it to go from your interest in maritime history to a murder mystery? Does this murder mystery happen on board a ship, may I ask?
Well, first of all, ahoy, and thanks for acknowledging my maritime heritage, Commodore and Perry and his brother, Oliver Hazard Perry. I do appreciate that. This particular mystery, Upon This Rock, takes place in a small Italian town called Orvieto. And it's been getting incredible reviews, bestseller, and actually currently it's being turned into a screenplay. And then hopefully soon we'll have someone who options it, which would be wonderful. The next book, however, I will give you a little bit of a secret. I am going to kill someone on a cruise ship.
Wow.
Well, you know, after having the cruise ship having suffered the bad rapport from the pandemic breakouts, now you're going to add a little bit of vinegar to the wound, right?
Yeah, I'm in between, I'm working on a mystery that's set in a small town in Spain with the same people from Upon This Rock. But then I decided, you know, with having worked aboard ship and gone around the world almost three times, 75 countries, I think I really need to do kind of an ocean-going murder upon the Orient Express. But there will be no COVID in it, I promise it. I don't think anyone wants to read about the last 2 years, personally.
All right, David. This is a two-part question. 75 countries. Which one is your hidden little prize that people don't know about that you really loved? And then which one was really an open sewer that you never want to go back to?
Oh, well, I will never say any country is an open sewer because Lord knows we have enough problems here. But I would say a real surprise for me was the Faroe Islands, which is by the country of Denmark. Yep. A lot of people have never been there. And I found it really, really interesting to see how the people survive. I learned something because there's been a lot of news about from environmentalists saying, oh, they still kill whales up there. Well, yes, that is true. But the Faroe Islands is literally in the middle of nowhere in the North Atlantic, and whales are a source of food for them. And I actually tasted whale meat, which tastes like beef. So they kill it there very sustainably, and it is a major food group for this group of islands, which has very, very few people and very, very hard living conditions.
Let me just inject, did you know that the Faroe Islands are recognized by FIFA? There are more countries in FIFA than the United Nations, obviously, because England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland are four countries, and for the UN and the Olympics, it's just Great Britain. But the Faroe Islands have their own soccer team.
Yeah, so my father-in-law, my husband's father, was big in soccer, and, yep, he knows all about it. If anyone knew that the Faroe Islands had a soccer team besides you, it's my father.
Okay.
David, when you were recently in Orvieto, how did they respond to, because they were the subject of your first novel, and which I interviewed you for in 2020, how did they respond to having you come back and what's happened since that novel was published?
Well, thanks for asking. This year was kind of like last year never happened, which I'm sure a lot of us would be happy to wish. I was supposed to do a special reading and event last summer, but this year the mayor of Orvieto invited me to give a presentation at the city hall. It was a standing room only. I read from the book, translated one section into Italian. We're in the midst of getting it translated into Italian. And the book is now on sale there in Orvieto. So for me, it was really like a homecoming. And the short answer to your question is the people were very, very receptive. I remember one of our favorite restaurants there is called the Restaurant De Carlo. And there is a character in my book named Marco, who is, let's say he's loosely based physically, at least on Carlo. So our first day back, we went into the restaurant to eat, and I saw Carlo, and I said, Carlo, how are you doing? And he said, no, in a very thick Italian accent. My name is not Carlo. My name is Marco. He had clearly read the book, and he liked being one of the characters.
Wow. So how do you make sure that, you know, when you're writing something that it's not subconsciously something you heard before, that everything is original? Because we all are, you know, products of our influences and such things.
Well, that's a very good question. And, of course, at the very front of my book is what every author who writes fiction should have. This is a work of fiction, and any resemblance to characters living or dead is completely coincidental. Having said that, there is no character in my book that is based on a real person, quote-unquote, but there are several who are inspired by real incidents, but it is certainly fiction. But to answer your question more directly, sometimes I have to remind myself, I'm not writing about David or Alfredo or a different friend. I'm writing about a character that may look like them or have done something that is inspired by them. So you do have to keep track of it in your brain, and in my case, I keep notes and timelines next to my computer.
Well, I might mention, David, that the characters, the protagonists, the couple in your book, you know, are quite charming personalities. And are you going to be using these same characters in future books that you write, or is each one going to be unique?
No, that's a great question. In the next book, which the working title is Thorns of the 15 Roses, which is inspired by a real-life horrible massacre during the Spanish Civil War in this tiny town of Grazalema in Andalusia, Spain, three of the characters from Upon This Rock go on, and it's 8 years later. It takes place actually this summer in 2022. I wanted to set this book completely free of COVID, completely free of mask mandates, completely free of political turmoil, not making a judgment on any of that. I just wanted the story to stand on its own. And three of the characters, Adriano and Lee, go on, as does someone who I guess would best be identified as a spy, Magda, also pops up in this book. I think those three characters, Magda, Adriano, and Lee, and maybe some of the others, will appear in all of my books.
Have you been approached for the screenplay or the Netflix special yet?
Well, the short answer is yes. There's a screenwriter with a lot of Hollywood credibility here in Southern California. His name is Rodney Vance. He read the book about a year and a half ago and found me online and said, I love the book. This needs to be a movie or a Netflix thing. And he's in the midst of the screenplay now. And then the next part is actually, yes, getting it optioned and picked up by Netflix or a director. And my hope is, because nowadays, as you know, there is such a cry for interesting content, I think it would be perfect as a Netflix series because, as Karen knows, it's a fairly complex story that takes place during different time periods, and I think it would need the longer form of a Netflix or an Amazon Prime special to do it justice. So once the screenplay is done, light candles, I need a producer. If anyone's out there, please call me.
Who do you see the actors? Who do you have any, anyone in mind?
Well, yes, and I can't think of his name now because I'm terrible with actors' names, but the actor that played the young Duke Atreides in the remake of Dune, I think, would make a wonderful Lee.
You're talking about Timothy Chalamet?
Yes. He's
probably available.
The other person may sound a little strange to you, but one of the characters in Upon This Rock, one of my favorite characters, is a 93-year-old woman named LaDonna Volsini, and she is Italian through and through, carries a lot of history in her brain, and she's very, very important to the plot. And I thought, what better to have than an Italian actress of great fame who is actually 93? So I'm hoping for Sophia Loren.
Ooh. Or maybe Isabella Rossellini with some makeup.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And then there's also a wonderful role of a woman called Lady Peg, who's a gossipy blogger in Orvieto. And that would be tailor-made for someone like a Maggie Smith, or I believe her name is Parker Taylor, or Parker Holland, I get it wrong, the wonderful actress in the TV miniseries Hollywood, something like that.
Well, you know, David, one of your lead characters was very influential in knowing and making networking connections, in politics and government agencies and so forth. And that's actually coming, I can't help but think that's coming a little bit from your experience, because that's really who you are in San Francisco. I mean, you know everybody.
Yeah, the main characters are from San Francisco. One of them is a computer nerd. One of them is a PR guy, and they run a business together. And they're very connected with San Francisco city politics. They're also 30 years younger than me and my husband, so they're very good looking. But otherwise, as I say, it's complete fiction. But yes, it's hard to write about something that you don't have experience of. I remember Ann Beattie once said in a lecture I heard in Washington, D.C. when I was a young man, only you can write what only you can write, i.e. you have to use your own experience when you're putting together a book.
Have you ever been through the tunnels in Orvieto?
Oh, are you kidding? Listen, you trip upon them. I mean, Orvieto is famed for its Etruscan history, and there are many people who still believe that there are Etruscan treasures under every house. And the joke is, if you ask someone, do they have a hidden tunnel under their house, the short answer is everyone does. It is absolutely crisscrossed with hidden tunnels, which are very important to the plot of the book.
David, have you been out on the on the water at all since the last interviewed you a couple of years ago.
Oh boy, and we are looking forward to getting back. We did take a cruise earlier this year with a very dear friend of ours, a 91-year-old gentleman, and he wanted to get back on the water, and we took a California coast cruise between Los Angeles and San Francisco, and in November we'll be taking another one with him down to Mexico. I asked him what itinerary he wanted. He says, "I don't care. I just love being aboard ship," and that's my idea of a good time, too. But as you know, before COVID, once or twice a year, I would get offered a trip in exchange for giving lectures about maritime history. And in December, I will be lecturing aboard Seabourn in the Caribbean, giving maritime lectures and also speaking about my book. And then in April, we'll actually be getting a free transatlantic cruise in exchange for giving lectures on maritime history. So you don't get money, but you do get a free trip. And for me, there's nothing better than talking about ships on a ship.
There he is, soon to have an obelisk in Union Square right next to the other Perry. It is David Perry, maritime historian and author extraordinaire. David, congratulations on the efforts, and let's catch up down the road.
I look forward to it. Thank you all very much. Ahoy.
And Karen,
thank you, David.
Karen, as always, thanks for checking in.
Well, it's always my pleasure, and I'll be seeing you next week.
All right, sounds good. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a break, and we'll come back on Sports Byline.